Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC on ESPN Plus. I hope you had a safe weekend. Coming up on today's show, I'll be joined by Gab, Sid, Ali and Craig Burley as well. But we start, as we always do, to take a look at how the coronavirus is affecting football around the world. And it's all about when games can come back, when things can restart. We start in the Bundesliga. Now, they plan to resume the season in early May. Now, that's behind closed doors and finished before June 30th. Meanwhile, in Italy, hopes to have the players back at training by May the 4th. Meanwhile, the Championship advises clubs not to return to training until May 16th, hopes to restart the season in June. Now, report saying that UEFA hopes to finish competition during a three-week block in August. More on that a little later on. In Ligue 1, planning to resume season on June the 17th. Well, let's welcome in Gab Marcotti to talk about some of those subjects. I want to start with the Bundesliga. I listened to your podcast that dropped today. Janar Fjontov, the special guest, talking about this optimism around the Bundesliga, trying to get it back as soon as possible. How realistic is that, Gab?
Well, look, I mean, as you know, in Germany, they have the most resources, certainly in Europe, to go and fight this, both in terms of ICU capacity, in terms of testing. They have the most money. They're pretty confident that they can go and do this. They figure they're going to allow about 240 people in per game in both the top flight and the second division. They're going to test everybody every 3 days. I worked out it's going to be round about 100,000 tests, just under, over the 2 months. But as Jan Fjortoff pointed out, he's like, there's two big stakeholders that are going to have a say in this that haven't told us what they think yet. One is the government, who have not expressed a view on this yet, and that remains to be seen whether they can do it. And second, of course, is the virus itself, because we have no idea what it's going to do. So they have a plan in place, but I think it's too early to see whether they can bring it to fruition.
Meanwhile, Italy looking to get training back May the 4th, Gab.
Yeah, the thinking is come back May the 4th. Gravina, the Italian FA president, he laid out a plan. There is some opposition to this, not least from the Italian Olympic Committee, from which the FA is actually sort of underneath it in terms of authority. Conflicting views from the government as well, with the Minister of Sports saying, well, that's a possibility, and the health ministry saying, whoa, let's pump the brakes there. So this is all, I think, very much up in the air. They would like to at least go back to training in early May and then see where they are. But the first step is they have to go and test everybody, and I think you can probably budget a good 3 or 4 days to go and test every player, staff member, coach, and so on, in and around the 20 Serie A teams.
Meanwhile, Gab, it's the first time I've heard of this. UEFA won all the domestic competitions done by the end of July, and then August will be about the Champions League. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, this UEFA want this, UEFA want that. UEFA's made it very clear. They're not going to stand in anybody's way. And, you know, if leagues need to finish first, they're going to finish first. However, one of the key things about UEFA, obviously, that you have to remember is there will still likely be restrictions on travel for a long time, even after the lockdown ends, even after we can go and play behind closed doors. So UEFA is saying, okay, you guys finish things up domestically, where presumably restrictions on travel will be eased first, and then we'll come in at the end of it. This is one scenario of them coming in when the leagues have wrapped up. They want to be want to minimize the disruption, so to speak. And this is one scenario that's out there. They're talking to the European Clubs Association, but nothing has been decided yet as far as UEFA are concerned.
Well, just a reminder, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast available to listen to now. As we mentioned, the brilliant Janar Fjontov is joining them as well today. Be sure to download it. Tottenham Hotspur confirmed today that they'll be following in the footsteps of Liverpool and will not be furloughing their staff. This is them doing a complete 180 after initially saying that they will. Gab Marcotti still with us. Craig Burley joining us as well. Gab, this was after quite a big public outcry.
Yeah, that's right. And look, Tottenham going further, they're going to make some of their facilities at their new stadium available to the National Health Service here in England. I think they just kind of understood that while they're making savings off this, they pale by comparison to the reputational damage when you juxtapose it with the size of their turnover, the size of their profits in previous year, and really the anger that this engendered among some observers. And they've gone in the other direction, basically saying, hey, what can we do to help? We have these great big facilities in North London that are not being used. Are they useful to you?
Craig, this needs to make complete sense, yeah?
Well, it almost makes complete sense for individual businesses to make their own individual decisions. I think Gab's absolutely right. It's a reversal on a PR exercise here that was going drastically wrong. They're not the only club. Liverpool were going down that road as well. The anger towards the ownership, an exiled billionaire businessman. And as Gab was saying, you know, furloughing staff that are lower paid while saving money was not going to make the big difference to the business going forward in terms. And so it makes sense, and I'm just pleased that for the time being, people are going to be receiving their salary and Tottenham will not be following those individuals.
Sticking with Spurs, suggestions reporting that £200 million could be the price tag on Harry Kane's head if indeed he is to leave North London. Craig, if you're Manchester United, we talked about this last week, and you want to get Kane to Old Trafford, £200 million would do it. However, the problem is then that's it. You wouldn't be able to buy anybody else. Would it be worth it in your view?
Well, you wouldn't be looking at the likes of Jadon Sancho and one or two others that they want to add to the Bruno Fernandes signing. And although we had Danny Higginbottom on last week, who thought they were 2 to 3 players away from challenging, as you know, I would beg to differ in that front. I think the squad needs an overhaul. So you've got to make that balance. But on the other side of the coin, there's two players out there in the natural role of strikers who you would look at coming in and absolutely making a difference. One of those you're not going to get, and he's in his 30s now, Robert Lewandowski, who is the best out-and-out striker on the planet, in my opinion. The next is the injured currently Harry Kane. Now, the question is how much does Harry Kane want to push for a move away from Tottenham Hotspur? Because we know how much power lies within players and their agents. But the bottom line is Harry Kane would make a huge difference to Manchester United, but it wouldn't make enough of a difference, in my opinion, to get them challenging Liverpool and Man City on that signing alone. So that is a fine balancing act in terms of trying to bring players to a football club.
So would you avoid it, Craig?
If I thought I could go and get Harry Kane, I would go and get Harry Kane, right? Because, as I said, next to Robert Lewandowski, he's the best natural striker at a good age range, that is, out there at this moment in time. So if I absolutely could bring Harry Kane to the football club, would I go and do it? Yeah, but if you're targeting 3 or 4 signings and you want to blow all the money in one, that's a decision that they have to make. But I get the feeling, and I don't know, maybe Gab will correct me on the financial fair play aspect, but I get the feeling that £200 million is not going to be their budget if they want to go and spend and revamp that squad. They have the financial clout to go out there and muscle a few transfers in.
Go on, Gab.
Did I hear Gab, Craig willingly bring up the term financial fair play there? So I'm going to bite. Obviously, it depends on many different things, and the fact that financial fair play will likely be relaxed for the 2019-20 season because of the pandemic. But United aren't going to have issues with financial fair play. I look at it more on a footballing level. I just think if you're Manchester United, you've got a ton of money to spend. You're not affected by FFP. However, while Harry Kane is a great striker, he's also somebody who suffered injuries of different kinds in, I think, 3 of the last 4 seasons. A guy who's injured now, he's supposedly coming back, but we haven't seen him play. You already have a very good center forward in Marcus Rashford, who's also injured, but he's already there, he's coming back. I just kind of feel £200 million is still an enormous amount of money. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near that, by the way, in the post-pandemic football economy. I think you're much better served letting Greenwood develop, seeing what Rashford can do for you, strengthening in other areas of the pitch, and then maybe thinking about taking a run at Erling Haaland, not this summer, but the summer after that, when supposedly his clause kicks in, rather than going out and committing all this money to somebody who's a phenomenal player. But, you know, Harry Kane right now is a last piece of the puzzle kind of guy, because you're going to get, what, maybe 5-6 years out of him, given his age and his injuries. And I don't think United are at that stage right now, in my opinion.
Didn't Haaland just turn down United?
Well, yeah, he turned down United at this stage of his career, but, you know, everybody who's been around him and, you know, says that it's not like he's turned United down because he doesn't ever want to play for Manchester United. He turned United down because he didn't think it was the right step for him right now. But, you know, in a year or two's time, and look, I'm not saying it's a Haaland versus Kane, one versus the other. Maybe it's not Haaland. Maybe you go for somebody else. Maybe you go for another center forward. Or maybe Rashford is fit and Greenwood is great, and those two guys are your central strikers, and maybe you go and you strengthen in midfield or at left back. I mean, United are one club with, because of some of the cuts that they made last season, and because, you know, they continue to churn out money, they're one club that is likely to be a lot less affected by the financial squeeze than anybody else. So in theory, they're well versed to go out and shop if that's what they want to do. But bringing in a veteran player like Harry Kane at this stage, I'm not sure it necessarily makes sense.
I think one of the problems here for United, Gab, is they've got to make a decision because, in some sense, is because, you know, I said last week, you know, you make a statement signing that attracts potentially other players when you're trying to sell the football club. Now, United have never had a problem selling themselves on the financial side, certainly not in recent years. But on the footballing platform, it has been a bit of a struggle since Sir Alex left. Now, if I am another player X, Y, or Z want to come to your club and I've just signed Harry Kane or whoever it is, then that for me is an extra selling point. So they have to make a decision down the line, because let's go back to the Erling Haaland position here. A year or two down the line, he's still flying at Borussia Dortmund, he's still the hottest property, but United haven't made any of those big signings. They haven't really taken the football operations that far forward. They are still trailing behind Liverpool and Man City. This is all hypothetical. But then your top players start looking elsewhere at other top clubs, at those two clubs I just mentioned, at Barcelona, at Real Madrid, at Bayern Munich. So United, in some sense, while not wanting necessarily to go out and spend that money, have to make a statement to try and get the snowball effect of bringing other big players to the club. They have to spend to try and get others to believe that they're going in the right direction. That's a big problem for them.
Meanwhile, Harry Kane may be on Old Trafford. Paul Pogba, though, leaving. Suggestions saying that he could be going back to Juventus, Gab.
Yeah, look, this is an old story. It keeps going on and whatever. The reality is Paul Pogba, we saw him play very briefly when he came back. Otherwise, you know, nobody's really seen him since September. I don't think he's going anywhere until he's fully fit. As far as Juventus are concerned, we'll see what their finances look like going forward. But, you know, the reality is at the 6-month mark, they racked up a pretty big loss. They'll hopefully claw some of that back. I think it's way premature for anybody to be thinking about Juventus, or rather, Juventus need to be thinking about thinning out their ranks a little bit, because they have a ton of players under contract who are still under contract next season, I think, before they want to go and start thinking about Paul Pogba.
Strange, isn't it, Craig? Because you could talk about Paul Pogba, but we haven't seen him since September.
Yeah, obviously it's been a troubling season for him, but it doesn't negate the guy's talent. It just hasn't happened for him consistently at Man United. The support act hasn't been great, it has to be said, but I don't think there's any much debate out there that he could have done more. Look, this is, as Gab said, Juventus have a huge squad, there are financial burdens. This, it would seem, is wishful thinking from Man United. Everyone's happy, they get a huge fee for him, they move the player on, he goes on to continue his career, they sort of negate some of the losses from that transfer. It's sort of wishful thinking all round. Everything's going to come out when this pandemic is over, hopefully very, very soon, and we get back to some sort of normality. I think ultimately, in an ideal world, you know, both player and club move in a different direction and United get you know, what they can for him. And Paul Pogba goes on and showcases his talent elsewhere. There is a chance that he could stay at United. Of course, he's under contract and play and have some semblance of success. But I get the feeling there's too much water has gone under the bridge with both himself and the agent and the club, that all parties, I think, in my opinion, want to see a split of some sense, and it's just how they can make that split happen to best negate the losses for Man United and get Paul Pogba what he wants, which is to go somewhere else and be happy and enjoy his football again.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. Keep up with all the latest news regarding those transfer rumours. Go over to the website and click on Transfer Talk.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
It's quite the telenovela, isn't it, that's developing in Catalonia. The latest chapter of the drama surrounding Barcelona. Well, it's involving a man who wants to be president next year, Victor Font. This is what Sam Marsden tweeted today. Strong from wannabe Barca president Victor Font on club situation. The result of years of mismanagement is the danger of economic bankruptcy and moral decay in which the club has settled. Game over. Well, let's welcome Sid Lowe into the show. Sid, obviously, this is a man who wants to be president next year. He's not going to be all sunshine and butterflies about the current situation at Barca, but still, this is quite the statement.
Yeah, it really is. Look, you're right to say that this is a man who wants to be a president, so in part his candidacy will be based on the strength of the attack that he can launch against this board of directors, because although Bartomeu won't continue, there will be a continuity candidate of some sort. But that said, you can only say something like this when there is, at the very least, the possibility to say it. When at the very least there is enough of a concerning situation that you can talk in these kind of terms. And actually, I must say, I think he's actually stopped slightly short of what a presidential candidate who is in opposition could say. And by that, I mean the fact that he says that there is a danger of economic bankruptcy and moral decay. I think he could quite justifiably argue that both of those things are already a reality, not just a danger.
We're used to this, though, in Spain. Bun fights between presidential candidates. Fans have seen this before. What fans will want to know, Sid, is how could this affect things out on the pitch?
Well, look, first of all, it's very difficult to know the answer to that, even if the season was going on. The fact that the season isn't going on is that, I know it's flippant, but in a way I'm kind of tempted to reply, well, what? Which part of on the pitch? There is no on the pitch at the moment. And I must admit, I think that these two things may actually be related. I think part of the reason why the institutional crisis has become so bad has in part being due to the fact that there has been no football. Now, this may well be a slight stretch, but I think there's some merit in the argument that suggests that for a long time, Lionel Messi, Lionel Messi's teammates, the football team, the football itself has propped up a club that is in crisis. So the moment that footballing element goes away, the moment the distraction goes away of, oh look, there's another wonderful Leo Messi goal, or oh look, there's another great performance from whoever it may be, then of course the focus becomes the institutional situation, which of course, in fairness, is worsened by the coronavirus crisis, which is not Barcelona's fault, and that situation gets even worse. So will this affect them on the pitch? Yes, it will. Why? Because they're not building the squad the way they already should, they're not building the team the way that they should, that the players are not happy with the board of directors, and yet of course this has been the case for 4 or 5 years now. And if you want the answer to the question, which is, will this affect them on the pitch? I think you only have to look at the fact that it's been 5 years since this team won the European Cup to see you've already got part of the answer. It is affecting them on the pitch.
Sid Lowe, thank you very much. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Go to YouTube, press subscribe on ESPN FC. I'm sure you know this already, but just to remind you, a full catalogue of 30 for 30s here on ESPN+, plus a lot of brilliant, genuinely brilliant documentaries, including The Two Escobars. The reason we bring this up as we welcome Sid Ali for the first time as well to the show, Sid tweeted, The Two Escobars, wow. Sid, I'm surprised you've never seen it before.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before because I've been struggling to get hold of it here in Spain. I was finally able to watch it last night and it was absolutely stunning. It's a brilliant, brilliant documentary, fascinating about a subject about which I felt like I knew a little bit, but not very much. And all the way through, the footage is extraordinary. The storytelling is brilliant. It's just a stunning piece of documentary work. And yeah, I can't recommend it highly enough.
Ali, it's so, the whole thing for me was just so emotional.
Yeah, and it's for those of us that lived in the area at the time, of course, at that time I was a younger kid in Venezuela, but you were very well aware of what was going on in Colombia, given that we were neighboring countries. And so it was clear, not only through the documentary, but through my own experiences, that these were two different worlds, soccer and the drug cartels. And yet two different worlds that in Colombia at the time came together in such a way that everything was intertwined, everything in reality, everything in the society of Colombian, at the Colombian present at that time was, had to do something with the drug cartel, one way or the other. The drug cartel controlled everything. And through it all, you understood, and you see this in the documentary, that relationship between soccer and the drug cartel, and how there's an inner struggle from the players, from Pacho Maturana, who was the coach at the time for Atlético Nacional and later for the Colombian national team, how he wrestles with the reality of, look, it's great that we are doing the things that we're doing out on the field, but we know where this money's coming from. We know that this is money laundering from the drug cartels, and yet we have to ignore that and focus on our job out on the field, which is to win games. And the more we win games, the more we feel bitter about ourselves. But guess what? The more you win games, the more attention you also bring onto the fact of, wait a second, how did Atlético Nacional become the team that they became? How did the Colombian national team become the team that they became? And then the pressure that all those players had to go through and had to feel going in onto the field and representing their country, but also knowing full well that there's a lot of people that have put a lot of money in them doing well. You try to play a game understanding that if you don't score, or that if you score an own goal, or if you don't play well, now all of a sudden your family is in danger. All of a sudden somebody gets kidnapped. All of a sudden somebody disappears. All of a sudden your life could be in danger. That is a reality that nobody can really comment to without having lived it. We watch it, we take it in, we understand it, but until you're going through it, I think it's impossible to really put into words. But if there was one image that I think you take from the documentary, at least in my mind, is the struggle of the players who would be called in to play at La Catedral, the jail that Pablo Escobar had built for himself. And you knew that you're getting this call up from Pablo Escobar. And what are you going to do? You're going to ignore it? Are you not going to show up? No, you have to show up, because it's not only your life that is in play, it's your family's life in play as well. And that's the way that those players went out on the field, knowing full well that if they didn't play well, if they didn't perform, somebody's life may be in danger.
If you haven't seen it, I implore you to go and watch it. You won't regret it. It's incredible documentary making. Thank you very much to Sid. Ali will be joining me on Extra Time later on.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, We'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
Be sure to join us on tomorrow's ESPN FC. I'll be joined by Ian Dar and Mark Ogden. Those two, of course, faced off in the latest edition of our ESPN FC quiz. If you haven't seen it, here we go then. Darkey finds himself 3-1 down. First to five wins it.
After Ryan Giggs, Ian, who has the most assists in the history of the Premier League?
I'm going to go for Cesc Fabregas.
It's the correct answer. Very good. 3-2.
Good knowledge.
Which keeper has the most clean sheets in the history of the Premier League?
Petr Cech.
The correct answer. 4-2. Bit of work to do still here, Ian.
Yeah, I'm struggling, aren't I?
Name of the referee Paolo Di Canio infamously pushed over whilst playing for Sheffield Wednesday, Ian?
Alcock.
Very good, Paul Alcock. 4-3. Game on.
We're doing good, aren't we? This is almost our classico.
I'm glad someone's enjoyed it, Ian. Okay. Who has scored? Mark, this is to win it all, by the way. Who has scored the fastest goal in Premier League history?
No. Quite recent, this, isn't it? Which means I've got no idea. Sadio Mane.
Incorrect. To make it 4-4, Ian, do you know the answer?
I think it's Shane Long of Southampton.
Yes! 4-4, Ian! What a comeback!
He argued was right. It is quite recent. Yeah, I think it was quite even last season.
Oh, this is, I'm far too excited by this. Right, here we go then. Ian, to win it all. Ready?
All right. Okay. Yeah, good. Yes. I didn't realise. Who's the keeper? It's like you're scoring a penalty shootout, this, isn't it?
Which team has the most defeats in Premier League histories?
What, in one season or ever?
No, in total.
Oh, in total?
Cumulative.
Whew. That could be a tricky one because it could be teams who've been in the Premier League the longest.
Yes.
The most defeats in Premier League history. I'm going to go for Everton.
Incorrect. Mark, a chance to win it all.
I was going to say Everton as well. So if it's not Everton, it will have to be Aston Villa.
We go again, boys. West Ham, the answer.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a really tough one.
Which manager? Now, this is for you, Mark. This is for Mark.
Right.
Which manager has won the most amount of promotions to the Premier League, Mark?
Jeez. Neil Warnock?
Incorrect. Ian, with a chance to win it all.
Promotions to the Premier League. Now I'm struggling with this. Steve Bruce?
Is the correct answer,
Ian. That was a total guess.
Twice with Birmingham, twice with Hull. Congratulations, Darkey. You are the winner in an extraordinary contest. You look dead and buried at halftime. Extraordinary comeback. Istanbul-esque, some have already said. Yeah. Ian Dark, the champion. Commiserations then to Mark Ogden.
Good stuff then from Ian Dark. Nothing though compared to this little girl who absolutely adores Messi, sent him this video, and the skills are, well, exceptional. Great keepy ups and then the finish as well to boot. Her face is priceless. I hope Messi gets to see that and responds. Certainly it deserves something from the Ballon d'Or winner. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Be sure to join us tomorrow with Mark and Ian with us. Stay tuned though. Ali and Not Bothered Craig with us for Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Craig, am I right in thinking you have no power in the house at the moment?
Correct. So just about to do this and it dropped. It seems today is not quite... It's not a golfing day today. It's not golfing weather, so it's a bit breezy. And the power's just... I don't think it's just my house. I think it's the whole street.
No, it's big storms around at the moment. Let's get on with the questions then, before everything cuts out. In the past 12 to 15 years, Ali, which Champions League winning team do you think was not deserved?
Wow. What a loaded question that was. I don't think it's so much about not deserved, but I just hate for a title to be decided, and a title of the magnitude of the Champions League final to be decided on a slip. And so I go back to John Terry and the final in 2008 against Manchester United. Look, if he steps up, misses a penalty, or Van der Sar makes a save, then so be it. But the fact that a slip in that moment, you know, of such importance and has such an impact and influence on the outcome, I hate to see that. So regardless of whether it was John Terry or if I had it been a player for Manchester United, I would hate in any case and in any event for a final and a moment of that magnitude to be decided on a player slipping.
Craig, this is right up your street, isn't it, this question?
No. Look in the history books. Just go down, see who won the tie, see who won it, get the pictures, see who lifted the trophy. Job done, we can move on. And I'm looking at the wrong camera.
Ali, would Neymar be a starter in the 2005 Brazil team?
Well, I think the obvious player that would drop out would be Adriano. And if that was the case, then maybe you push Ronaldinho further forward, playing alongside Ronaldo. At that time, Brazil was trying to play with two strikers. But what I can tell you is that Neymar was not coming in for Ronaldinho. He was not coming in for Kaká. He was not coming in for Ronaldo, obviously. And so if there was any chance in terms of that attacking four as to who would be the odd man out, it would be Adriano. And maybe you park Neymar down the left-hand side and Ronaldinho further forward.
Craig, who was better, Henrik Larsson or Gianfranco Zola? I'm going to say soccer ball.
Yeah, what part of soccer ball?
The overall part.
Well, there's many different facets to soccer ball. It's a bit like asking who was better, Gianfranco Zola or John Terry or Rio Ferdinand. Who was the better natural goal scorer, Henrik Larsson? Who was the most gifted at an individual skill at wriggling away from people, Gianfranco Zola? But a different skill set. You know, you score, don't score the amount of goals that Larsson scored for no reason. And, you know, Gianfranco Zola is remembered, particularly by Chelsea fans, for the skill set and the ability to pick a pass. It's apples and oranges here. And if that's
so
not
who are you picking first in playground? Right, you're a captain in playground. Who are you picking first?
As I told you last week, Dan, I'm a very much a 50-50 guy these days. And that shall remain so in this lockdown.
God, I hate 50-50. Right then.
I'm more interested in finding out what's going on in the New York Film Academy behind Craig Burley's head at this point.
We went through this last week. This is Craig's secret life.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's my acting degree that I don't normally share with people, unlike Frank LaBeouf. In fact, the phone has rang constantly with the upcoming films that are coming out that people want me to play a part in.
Yeah.
But fully qualified.
Didier Drogba or Samuel Eto'o? Ali?
Wow. Oh, man. This is a tough one. I'm going to go Samuel Eto'o, but it's tight. It is really, really tight. The physicality of Didier Drogba may be superior to that of Samuel Eto'o, but I do think that Samuel Eto'o was a better finisher than Drogba. This is tight, but I'm going to take Eto'o.
50-50, man.
You got it.
What? Honestly. What's happening nowadays?
I don't know. Oh, now, if anyone saw the quiz between Ali and Herc, they would have seen Ali give pretty much every answer wrongly as Landon Donovan. That's the next question coming up, Ali. Donovan or Dempsey?
Well, you cannot deny the numbers and the dominance of Landon Donovan in Major League Soccer and his importance to the U.S. national team. However, I'm going to say that in terms of an exciting player and an effective player and a guy who truly achieved heights at the club level that Landon Donovan did not achieve, and certainly internationally, I would suggest that I'm going to take Clint Dempsey. I really do. There's more of a wild card to his game, and I do think that his potential and his upside was higher than that of Landon Donovan. Understanding, of course, the importance and the historical importance of Landon Donovan in U.S. soccer, but in one game, if we're going to go to that hypothetical scenario of picking somebody in your backyard, I'm going to take Dempsey.
Who would step up to take a title-deciding penalty for ESPN FC between Craig and Ali? Craig, of course, you took penalties for Derby. Ali, not so much.
Yeah, I was never comfortable taking penalties. I wasn't bad at them, but I wasn't comfortable. So, yeah, go ahead, Craig. Be a hero, score for us. Let's go party afterwards. Well, you'll go have a couple of drinks. Maybe I'll have Shirley Temple or two, and then we'll go home.
Perfect. Craig, I just found out my surname is from Inverness. What can you tell me about Caledonian Thistle?
Inverness, Caledonian. There used to be two teams, and this is to my best of my knowledge. Inverness is a small place in the north of Scotland. There used to be two teams there, I believe. Inverness, Caledonian, and Inverness Thistle. I might be wrong. I could be wrong. But they both... The both teams merged to make one club because it was more sustainable in that area. And they were famous, although they've been playing some top flight football in the last few years, they were a very, very small club and still are to some degree. But they were very famous for beating Celtic at Celtic Park under the stewardship, Celtic at the time, of John Barnes, which cost him his job. And that was one of the biggest upsets at the time in Scottish football history, and it followed a headline the next day that said, "Super Cali go ballistic, Celtic are atrocious." One of the most famous things in Scottish football history. There you go.
Trust you to bring up something bad about Celtic with your anti-Celtic ways, Craig.
I had left by then. I have to say, I must tell you, I had left the club 2 months before then and played no part in that particular debacle.
Finally, Ali, what's your favourite word? 100% Lukaku or Leipzig?
Well, Lukaku's not mine, that's Stevie Nicol. Leipzig is not mine, that's yours. And so therefore, 100%! Yes. No, no doubt about it. Because Leipzig has to do with the way that you say Leipzig, which is Leipzig! And then, of course, Lukaku has to do with Stephen Nicol and his disdain for Lukaku. Lukaku! But it's certainly 100%. Yes.
That is it. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Craig, hope you get your power back. We'll be back tomorrow for more. I think Ian Dark and Mark Ogden are with us tomorrow. So be sure to stay tuned.